Hello and welcome to another episode of the Principal Liner Notes podcast. This actually is the kickoff episode for season 7 of your very friendly neighborhood homemade podcast. This is Sean Gaylord, and I am so excited to welcome my first guest for season 7, Kim Strobel. Thank you so much for being here. It is truly an honor, and I am grateful.
Oh, thank you, Sean. I think this is going to be a great conversation.
Definitely. We actually, this always happens when I have a guest on. We go down a great rabbit hole and before we hit record, and then usually myself or the guest, we go, you know what? We should have hit record a long time ago. So that's what happened to us. So that's always a sign that this episode is, it's always going to be a great conversation. So, Kim, by the way, and she'll talk more about this throughout the course of our time together. She is the author of a great book which came out this year from IM Press Books, which is a division of Dave Burgess Consulting Inc. I happen to be under that umbrella, but I do want to recommend and encourage you highly to pick up her first book, which I believe is going to be the first of many books, Teach Happy, Small Steps to Big Joy. Kim, this book is a masterpiece, and as I shared with you during the course of a health scare that I had, this book kind of served as really good therapy for me, and I'm grateful for you sharing your story.
Oh, thank you. You know this. Book was an idea I've had for 10 plus years, Sean. And, I'm somebody who sets a lot of goals in my life. And for the most part, I keep my promises to myself. Which, by the way, I did hear this really great quote the other day that if you want to build self-confidence, then you keep the promises you make to yourself. Isn't that good?
Wow,
I
really?
know
That's
it's just been
powerful.
resonating with me so much. And I think, I do have a strong record for the most part of doing that, but this book was the one thing that I just was not keeping my promise to myself. I kept thinking, I'm not a writer. I don't think that I'm an author, but I have all this stuff that I want to bestow and share, and I want to share my struggle and my blueprint for how I got out of it, or those kinds of things. But I would work on it for a little bit and then I'd abandon it for like 5 years. And then I'd work on it for a little bit and then I'd say, it's a mess. I don't know what's going on. And then finally, I was down in Atlanta speaking and somebody was in the crowd and they texted George Kuros and they said, you need to get her to write a book for you. And so I had spoken to George a couple of different times in different manners. And he finally called me and said, enough is enough, Kim Strobel, write the darn book. And he said, you speak it, so just write what you speak. So I had to reverse engineer that because I can talk and talk and talk. But if you say, now, Kim, sit down and write this paper on this topic, I'm blocked, but I can talk it. And so finally, I think the universe shifted and all the angels came in and they helped me get this book out into the world.
That's awesome to hear, and you're not the first person that I've heard where George has directly encouraged and motivated folks to create content. So, what great advice and great timing for you. And I remember seeing this on one of your social media channels. Like I remember when you signed the book contract,
Yes.
and it was an event. And then you along the way, you were very open about the kind of the highs and lows of the writing process, and so I appreciated that as a fellow author, and
You
was
know
very
this.
so was very inspired by that. So but I will, I guess what I want to ask you is, and you talk about this in the book, one of your many roles besides keynote speaker, consultant, professional developer, educator, is happiness coach. And there are moments in the book where you're very honest about that and self-effacing about that too in some moments. So for those that are tuning in, and really around this time of the year, we're at the end of the year, in many school systems across our country, and probably right now, happiness is something that is kind of far from the agenda. And there are teachers right now and other educators where we are all thinking survival or countdown, or maybe not even countdown. It's like, how can I get through the next moment? So what is a happiness coach?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I have to giggle because today in Tell City, Indiana, it's the last day for students. And, you know, I miss that feeling, Sean. I miss that feeling of like, okay, you know, like, you know, you got that mixture of like sadness and like you walk through the whole school year. But then I just remember driving home feeling so excited that, oh my goodness, I was going to get a reprieve from all the stress and I was going to have good time spent with my own babies during the summer, my own children. And so it's funny to hear you say that because when the school year ends here, I always get a little nostalgic, like, well, my summer just gets super busy now with the role that I'm in.
Right.
But yes, I actually think that, first of all, when I get introduced as a happiness coach, I think 10 years ago, I would have been laughed out of the room because we've been wired to think that happiness is like frivolous or like, you know, kind of fluff, like sunshine, unicorns and sprinkles. And does this mean, Kim, that you're one of those people who's just preaching positivity all of the time? And nobody wants to hear that. But there's actually a ton of neuroscience behind the brain and how we can rewire it towards happiness, but also understanding why happiness needs to be at the forefront of our life. And I'll get into that in a little bit. But first, what I want to define is happiness, because, you know, happiness is not like the goal. It's not like you and I finally jump through all the hoops and achieve all the things and get ourselves to this wonderful, beautiful state where we don't have external circumstances anymore that are, you know, driving us crazy. And all of a sudden we've arrived at happiness. What it is we are all a mixture of happy and unhappy every day. I mean, Sean, I got up this morning, the sun was shining. I opened up the bedroom curtains and I was like, oh, today's going to be a great day. Like I felt great happiness. And then I played with my dogs and I was super happy. And then I sat down and did some emails and got super, super stressed and unhappy because I'm leaving for vacation tomorrow and 17 people need something from me. So then I went straight down into unhappiness, right? Then I went and exercised and my happiness level went back up. I mean, we're all a mixture of both. And so Arthur Brooks, whom I love, who wrote, I think he wrote Build a Life You Love. He says, happiness is a direction that we can head in. And so it's not that you finally arrive there, but what I know from the research is that as human beings, we can all get happier. So when I say I'm a happiness coach, and you read this in my book, and we can certainly talk about it, but it came out of my own darkness and my own intense struggles for years. And so I tell people, yes, I'm a pretty darn happy person a whole lot of the time. I will admit that. I'm not going to push that away and pretend like I'm not. But I'm a practitioner now of happiness. I'm not the guru of happiness. I'm a practitioner. And I have specific habits in my life that I've used that have elevated every area of my life, you know? And so even my own book has sticky notes in it, Sean, because I'm like, I got to work on this again. I've forgotten all about this chapter and what I told everybody to do, and I'm failing at it myself. So let me go back and revisit it.
That I'm kind of guilty of that too with my own. And I've highlighted your book quite heavily. One of the things that I also appreciate is your, you know, and again, your voice throughout this book is just like now, you know, it's very conversational. You do drop research. You do share a lot of your own personal narrative, which is extremely powerful. As I shared with you before I pressed record, and a lot of your story really served as kind of good therapy for me in my convalescence from my health scare. But there's just so much that I wanted to just ask you, but I guess, first and foremost, for that leader that is out there who may be struggling right now, and may be at a crossroads and may not be feeling that exhilaration or even having that moment that you shared in the morning, where are some ways that they can help not only themselves as leader, but then also too, they're a big part of the equation in helping teachers teach happy. So I know that's kind of a large, broad thought there, but just thinking about it from just the lens of leadership and leaders who may be struggling, who may not be leading happy.
Yes. Well, I mean, I was a former curriculum director, and so I certainly understand the demands that are placed on leaders. And the research actually says that school leaders experience even higher levels of stress than our teachers do. And as I said to you, I feel like school leaders are kind of like the stepchild or the middle child of the family. There's a lot of focus at times placed on teachers and what we can do to support them. And then, of course, you have, the higher level leadership at the district office. And many times I believe you can feel like the lonely stepchild in this profession. Whereas, where are really the emotional supports that need to be in place for you as a human being who's navigating this very difficult profession? One of the issues is that the cognitive workload far exceeds the time allowed in a day to get everything done that needs to get done. And this is true for teachers too. So our brains are constantly getting pinged at stress. All day long, we are in fight, flight or flee mode sometimes because the adrenaline is coursing through, whether it's chat, like you said earlier, I think you talked about in one day, there were six challenging incidents with students that you were trying to deal with, along with the 1500 other decisions. I heard that recently that an educator makes a minimum of 1500 decisions in a day's time. And so part of this is the profession we know is completely out of control in its expectations and its demands, and it makes us feel like it is never enough. And what I would also, so I say that because, first of all, I think that we have to give ourselves some grace. We usually are kind of type A ambitious people. That's why we stepped into leadership. And I would say that the inner critic really rears its ugly head day in and day out because it doesn't feel like it's enough. And so one of the things is we have to allow ourselves to have those feelings, but we really have to learn how to prioritize our well-being. This is critical to us being an effective leader. And honestly, Sean, to being feeling very good in all the other important parts of our lives as parents of our own children, in our own marriages and relationships, in our hobbies and recreation and the things that bring us to life, in our spirit. And so the research up the last 15 years has actually said that when I can teach you, Sean, how to get your brain to positive more than negative, neutral, or stressed, or when I can teach your employees' brains to get to positive more than negative, neutral, or stressed, here's what we start to see across the board. We see that you are 31% more productive as an employee. You are 10 times more engaged in your job, and you're 3 times more creative, all because your brain is more at positive than negative, neutral, or stressed. And when your brain gets at stressed, and you probably know this, I'm a big studier of the neural science of the brain. There's actually parts of the brain that get completely shut down and are inaccessible to us. But what do we do, Sean? What do I do when I'm stressed? I start cranking out 65-hour work weeks or 70-hour work weeks, thinking that I'm being productive, and I'm not. I'm actually losing productivity.
Yes. So why do you think that is though? I mean, what you've shared, and for me, this is year 32 in the gig. You've talked to teachers and school leaders all over the country, but yet, there are statistics that show that folks are leaving the profession, that there's, just all kinds of kind of the lack of well-being. But why do you think it still this still manifests it's manifests itself in our profession with this kind of just the stress and the lack of fulfillment and happiness, and why should an educator or school leader have to make 1,500 decisions? I could probably triple that. Why do you think that just keeps on, even though the research says this, and we have statistics and data that show this isn't working?
I think for one thing, these are deeply ingrained social scripts that are a part of who we are as human beings. Our grandparents and our parents and our teachers back in the day, they all meant really well. But the formula for how you get ahead in life, Sean, was work really, really hard in school and get really, really good grades. Because if you get really good grades, you can get into a really good college. And when you get into college, now we need you to pour it on even more because we need you to be at the top of your class so you can get the good degree so that you can land the good job. And now, when you land the really good job, I need you to spend the next 40 years of your life just putting your head down, cranking away, making the money, making sure you can support your family. And if you make good money, maybe you can buy a nice house and you can get a nice car and you can do all of these things. And once you've done that, Sean, now you've arrived at happiness. And even though you and I can sit there and go, well, we know that it doesn't matter if I live in a 5,000 square foot home or 1,000 square foot home, the research says that my happiness level is not going to be altered by that. My happiness level is not going to be altered by if I make 75,000 or 75 million. The research supports over and over again. I know the research, Sean. I'm still convinced if I can get the home on the lake or by the beach, I'm going to be a lot happier, And so these downloaded social scripts, they meant well because these people went through the depression and they had to work so many hours just to maintain their family. But what we now know from the research coming out is if you want to be more successful in your life, Sean, if you want to get happier in your, or if you want to become more successful, the way that you do that is by putting your happiness at the forefront of your life. And when I can get you to truly do that, to say, you know what, it's on like Donkey Kong right now. My well-being matters, and I'm not just going to shout it from the rooftops. I'm going to take the actions that support this. And when you do that, all of a sudden, you've upped your work game. You've upped the other areas of your life, but it goes against the grain of what we've been taught. I read recently that Lee Iacocca, who was like the CEO of, was it Chrysler?
Yeah, Chrysler.
It was a disciplinary offense if you were caught laughing on the job.
Wow.
And I know that sounds crazy, right? But back then, it wasn't crazy for back then. So when Kim Strobel's over here talking happiness, you might think this sounds a little bit like fluff. This sounds like who can really do this? I'm telling you that 20 years of research from Harvard University and the University of Pennsylvania, where Martin Seligman has studied positive psychology for 40 years, that this is the exact formula that I've used in my own life. And I will tell you that while my life isn't perfect and there are times I still struggle, every area of my life has been elevated from the time I decided to put my happiness at the forefront.
It's powerful. It also kind of echoes one of the bits in your beautiful book, chapter 13, The Ripple of Hope. embracing small changes for big impact. And I just want to read a brief passage that I heavily highlighted, and it also echoes the work of another author that we're both connected to. Many times people think they have to take massive action to change their lives, but in reality, small changes over time can make a big difference. Just like when we invest with compound interest, we may not even realize we're making progress, but tiny adjustments build toward a snowball effect that works. And that echoes my friend Megan Lawson in her book Legacy of Learning, and also talking about like small moves. And if you just are deliberate and intentional with that, with the mindset, as you said, putting your happiness in the forefront, man, life gets better, right?
Yeah, it is so true. That's why I tell people, you know, the book is full of happiness habits, but you just pick one. You know, maybe you pick the 2-minute daily gratitude practice, because gratitude is one of the top five happiness habits. And I know we've all heard gratitude, and Oprah preached gratitude to me for years. Do a gratitude journal, have a gratitude journal. And I never did it, because Kim Strobel has to know exactly why if I'm going to do it. And so when I started hearing the research that if we're an average human being, you have about 70,000 thoughts a day, Sean. And if you're an average human being, 80% of those thoughts are negative. So when you and I put our head down on the pillow at night, most of us have had 56,000 negative thoughts.
Man, folks who are listening, that's like a rewindable moment here on the podcast. So I just want to make sure I heard that straight. 80% of the 75,000 thoughts that go in our head on average are negative.
Yeah. And what's even crazier, Sean, is of the 80% that are negative, 95% of that 80% are the exact same thoughts you had the day before.
My God.
And people go, how can this be, Kim? How can we have that many thoughts? And why are they negative? Well, they're negative because back in caveman, cavewoman times, we had this part of our brain called the amygdala. And the amygdala had one job, and that job was to scan for danger 24/7, because your life was on the line 24/7. Was there a saber-toothed tiger around the corner? Did we have shelter from the snow and the wind? Do we have a water source? Is there an angry clan of, you know, horsemen riding in to take their swords and slit our throat? I mean, the amygdala is the very thing that protects us. And so it has this amazing ability to constantly be scanning the environment and picking up danger or negativity. The issue is it's 2024, Sean. I have an amygdala, you have an amygdala, and it still works the same way. But what we also know about the brain is that the brain has neuroplasticity, and we can rewire the brain. I tell people all of the time, this 2-minute daily practice, it is amazing what it does to your life. And the research says that if I can get you to simply write down 3 different things that you're thankful for every single day, that somewhere between days 21 and day 30, you've rewired your brain. And so the brain has thousands and thousands of pathways that it goes down. And whichever pathways it goes down the most, like, I hate my job, I'm sick of my job, I'm sick of the people, the students drive me crazy. Like, all of this is true, right? And so if you had 1,600 negative thoughts yesterday about your job, tomorrow you're going to have 1,650 negative thoughts. And it just keeps getting down that road. And while we don't want to push away the thoughts and feelings, because those emotions deserve some space in our life, but what we know is that when you start to write down 3 things you're thankful for, all of a sudden your brain starts to take a new neural pathway feedback loop. And when it starts to just take that new pathway loop, there begins to be more good that pops on your radar than bad. And what I've noticed and what I've been working on, because I've done gratitude journaling now for several years, is even when something bad happens, Sean, I will get angry and I will get ticked off or whatever it might be, but I actually, given some reflection time, can see the little silver lining at times that that particular challenge did for me. And so I tell people, I do want you to be specific. Don't just say, I'm thankful for my health. That's too generic. I don't know. I'm thankful right now, Sean, that my legs have recovered from marathon training and I'm starting to get energy back in them again. Okay. That's a more specific gratitude. And I tell people all the time, I did this with my students. We would start every day with 90 seconds of gratitude and we'd go around the room and in 90 seconds, I had 27 gratitudes and we started our day. And at the end of the day, they grabbed their gratitude notebook and they wrote down three things they were thankful for because, you know, I wanted my students to be great readers and writers and mathematicians. But to me, it was teaching them how do you become good at life, you know? And in fact, I do have a gratitude prompt and tracker that anybody can download, and I'll share that link with you. It might get people who are considering this, it might get them thinking about where can I start looking for gratitude in my own life.
Nice. And again, those small moves, you know, and become the habit, because you go on to talk about James Clear's work in Atomic Habits, and it's, you know, it may be 1%, but that 1% will compound over time and shift and help. As a consultant and one that keynotes and helps schools out and helps different teams out and organizations, do you find a trend in terms of a need in the schools that you serve? Do you see a recurring thing, or I'm sure every school and every organization that you support is different, but do you just see an overarching trend? Just curious.
I do, and I think it can be summed up in one word: stress. You know, I gave a keynote not too long ago, and I had a group of principals who came up to me, and they happened to be mostly female. And they just said, Kim, this is what I want to do. I am called to do this work. But I just can't get it done. I just can't get it done. And I don't know what I'm supposed to take off my plate. I don't know. I don't see any window of opportunity to do anything different, you know? And so for me, then that is where my talk comes into play, because we don't know how to do anything different because we are operating out of that work hard mindset instead of understanding that when we actually give ourselves a reprieve, Sean. So the research says that when you work 50 hours a week, you produce about 37 hours of useful work. Okay, that's what the research across the board from Stanford University and Jack Nevinson did this big study too. And it all corroborates that 50 hours of work produces 37 hours of useful work. But if you just up that by five, if you just say, I just need to work five more hours, I just need to get this last thing done, whatever it is, you lose seven, Sean. You've now gone from 37 hours to 30 hours of useful work. You worked an extra five only to lose seven because our brains at stress are simply not working at optimal levels of performance, even though we think they are.
Wow. Wow, that's heavy. I didn't even think about it from that angle. I know your vacation is calling you, and I want to honor your time because we can keep going. I'm so just pumped right now. But this is Principal Liner Notes, and music is a big part of my well-being and a big part of my passion. And I'm just curious, Kim, because I know that you you shared very, very vividly your marathon experience, and I appreciate your courage there. And I hope it's good to know that you're doing better from that literal fall. But I'm curious, what is your kind of go-to music to fill your happiness and to fill your soul and to ignite some of that neuroplasticity?
Well, first, I have to tell you, Sean, here I am. I'm on a stage sometimes with groups of up to 6,000 people, and I am bestowing all of this great happiness knowledge. Okay. I think it's really great knowledge, and they react to it. But there's this one thing we do, and you'll be able to maybe you're the person to ask about this. So we do this dance party. We talk about the importance of play in our life.
Yeah,
And I
me too.
have this playlist, Sean. And I'm just going to tell you, people lose their minds and they say this is the most fun thing of the whole conference is this dance party that we do during the keynote. It's like I turn it on and I go through these different songs and it's like, I don't even know. Yeah, they're like animals out there. It's so fun. What is that, John? Music, what does it do to us?
It's the universal language that connects us, right? And it you know, I think it's something that's deep in our soul. And it's, you know, I really believe this. We all have a beat that, you know, will take us right to that place of happiness, or right to that place of peace,
Yes.
or right to that place of joy. It's just something. I can't explain it because it's
It's
divine.
amazing. It's magical.
Yeah.
So my favorite song, well, I'm looking here at my running playlist and I've got like, Daryl Hall and Oates on it. I've got Roy Orbison. I absolutely love the song Beast of Burden by the Rolling Stones. That's
Nice,
like
that's right. Yeah.
I freaking love that. I don't know when I'm running and I hear that. It just pumps me up.
I remember you putting that, I remember you sharing that one time, and I thought, you know, that's not a go-to song for a lot of folks. It's a great song. In fact, my oldest daughter, it's like one of her, you know, like, hey dad, when I'm at the bar, she's 25, when I'm at the bar, you know, we just start, you know, such a pretty girl, you know.
Yes, it's so fun.
That is, and the Stones are touring, so maybe you'll run into them on your way to vacation, or maybe they're coming out to Indiana, so
Yeah.
who knows, but they do give a lot of happiness. Kim, how can folks follow you, connect with you? I know that I subscribe to your I'm on your email list, and you're always providing bits of wisdom and inspiration. What are the best kind of venues that folks can connect with you?
Yeah, and just they can go to strobeleducation.com. And there's actually, if you go to my website and you give it like 3 seconds, there's actually a free little happiness webinar that pops up. And if you sign up for that, that's going to put you in our email list. And I do what's called a joy drop, a Sunday joy drop, where I try to drop a little bit of joy into you before you start the week. And then my Instagram is at Kim Strobel Joy because somebody took Kim Strobel. Can you believe that?
Wait a minute. I mean, often
And they don't even have
imitated.
any followers.
Are you serious?
I found that out like 4 years ago. I was like, I thought maybe if I could figure out who she was, I was going to try to pay her off. But
That's
I guess
crazy.
joy goes along with it.
It
So.
does, and that's a good landing spot. And again, I want to just encourage folks that are listening and watching to pick up a copy of Teach Happy, Small Steps to Big Joy. You can get this off Amazon, Barnes and Noble, order directly from your website. As educators are ending their school year, and you're looking for just a good beach read about the gig that you can highlight and take into your own life, take into your own professional practice, I highly recommend this book. It was great therapy for me, and I'm looking for, you know, Teach Happy. I'm just gonna say, Kim, and you probably have already heard this, lead happy. Let's,
I know, right? That I know. We got to do a spin-off.
yeah.
I agree. There is on my website, Sean, there is an admin study guide if somebody wishes to like lead a book club next year. And actually, if you order 10 or more copies to one location, you get the book for $15 a piece, I think. And I like the admin study guide. You can use it individually as a person as you go through the book. But I have a lot of schools who are actually doing a study guide month by month next year. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Great. That's great. And that's good because there's, again, this is the kind of book that, again, it stayed with me. And so I love that approach, to kind of do a month by month and make it almost like a year long reflection and build those small moves to joy, right? So
Thank
I'm
you.
so Kim Strobel, I am so grateful for you. You are welcome back on this podcast anytime, anytime.
Oh, thank you.
And
I have 72 topics we can talk about. I'm a talker, Sean, so thank
as
you
am
so
I.
much.
So I'm just grateful for your time and look forward to following you and continuing to learn and grow with you. And as we sign off here on season 7 of the Principal Liner Notes podcast, first of all, thank you for press and play or download on this podcast. I will have all of Kim's contact links in the show notes, and so please feel free to follow her and connect with Kim. She is an active presence on social media and truly a champion for joy and a champion for happiness, but also most importantly, a champion for humanity. So her voice and her gifts are what's needed. And speaking of which, in my typical sign off, I share this with you, Kim, and I share this with all who are listening. Don't forget to share with the world your dreams, your hopes, your joy, because the world needs them, and you help make the world a better place, just like Kim Strobel. This is Sean Gaylord. This is the Principal Liner Notes podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I look forward to catching you on the flip side.